love. Do it, man.
Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, September 15th, 2017, and another week has flown by. That's the thing about this regular season now, at least for us. The days go by really quickly, and all of a sudden you're at another Sunday. So Tom Silverstein is here with me on this episode of the Packers Podcast to break down the Green Bay Packers against the Atlanta Falcons, and we're going to talk about some matchups, just like we did last week for Seattle. So how's it going, Tom?
It's going great. Please don't insinuate anything by the music that starts this podcast, because it was just a favorite song of mine back in the late 70s, nothing to do with any of my actions, and I will stick to that here right now.
The Rick James sketches on the Chappelle Show were some of my favorites.
Oh, God, is that funny.
God, they were so good.
This was before, I'm going to do one of these Bob McGinn history lessons.
That's
on
fine.
Music, but this was before Rick James's really big album hit with Super Freak and all that. This was kind of when he was really into deeper stuff, and it was a really good song. So anyway, I remembered it. I don't think I knew until many years later that it was about marijuana, you know. That's how stupid I was back then. So.
Well, it's a good song nonetheless.
It is a good song.
And it continues our streak of new artists. I was talking to Tom about this the other day. In the 2 years plus that I've been on the podcast, there's only been one repeat artist, and that was two songs by Stevie Wonder. Everything else, Bob and I tried to make sure we didn't repeat artists, and nobody's used Rick James. So that extends the streak there.
All right. So, all right. Score.
So let's talk about these matchups. Where should we start?
Well, it all starts with Julio Jones. Julio Jones versus everybody. Versus
pretty much
everybody who's wearing green and gold, including fans, whatever. That's how many people you need to cover him.
It's really going to be a different game, I think, than the way it played out last year. Not just because they have guys that are healthy, but I'm not sold that they're going to have somebody follow him all game long the way that they did with Gunter, really in both matchups. Last time around, they had Gunter follow Julio all over the field, and then Ha-Ha Clinton Dix was pretty much over the top on every snap, like you mentioned the other day, Tom. And I know that Devon House has filled that role a little bit in the past. He said that there was one game in Jacksonville where he followed him for just about every snap. And then there was a game in, 2014, was it here, when he had a little bit of experience on Julio. But
they ran out of guys, and nobody could cover him. And finally, at the end, they put House on him. And he actually did an okay job. The two of them fell on a play where House broke up a pass in the end zone. They both got hurt. But it was – he was the only one who could slow him down. You know, so it'll be interesting to see watch them match up again.
Do you think they'll try it again where he follows
him? No. I think they're going to stay side to side. I think they don't have one guy who matches up against him. And the reason they went with Gunter last year is because Randall and Rollins couldn't play bump and run. They couldn't press. Their groin injuries were slowing them down. And Gunter was the one guy who could get up and Jones's face and at least try to get him off balance. But boy, that was a mismatch too. You know, to press him, you got to be really strong. You got to have really quick, long arms, you know, quick hands. And if you miss, you know, you're toast.
Who do you think plays in the slot this game? Because, you know, the guys think that it can rotate game to game. Randall and Rollins don't think it's necessarily going to be one guy all year. Does it make more sense to have one or the other against Julio?
You know, I asked Joe Witt about that yesterday, whether he wants to stick with Rollins there or go with Randall. And he said, you know, they're both trained. He didn't want to give up, obviously, any clue as to what they were going to do this weekend. But I wouldn't be surprised. I think we talked about it the other day. If they play some dime defense and they have them both in the game in the slot and Kevin King on the outside and try to use those slot guys to blitz. I think they want to put as much pressure on Matt Ryan. That's really the only way you beat Julio Jones, is you put pressure on Matt Ryan. And I think Chicago did a really good job. I got to finally watch that game, and their front was just really outstanding, and they put a lot of pressure. Even on that touchdown that Austin Hooper caught, Matt Ryan just got, I mean, high load. It was brutal, and kudos to him, because he still was able to complete that pass.
And regardless of whether or not they end up having a corner that trails him, there's going to be bracket coverage a lot, I would imagine, in this game. So you'll have whatever corner is matched up with him in man, or, you know, even whatever part of the field it is in zone, and then Clinton Dix will be lurking over the top. So I talked to Rollins yesterday, just sort of what it's like to play as the guy that has that bracket help and the guy that doesn't. Mm-hmm. So when he talked about having the bracket help, he said that you can be a little bit more aggressive, you can take some more chances, you can try and play more physically, because if you lose a step or if you get beat, you have that guy over the top. And that makes sense. What I thought was unique and that I hadn't really considered is the way he views being the other guys that don't have the bracket help. He said you almost have to treat it like, you know, that if you screw up, it's a touchdown, because you know that there's no other help on the field. You have to be one-on-one, isolated, and if you mess up, the safety is on the other side of the field, because Morgan Burnett is probably going to be matched up with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so that, I thought, was interesting, that he said it's almost harder, you know, to be the guys that don't have to worry about Julio in that regard, because they don't have any cover whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what makes them so tough, because Sanu can hurt you and Gabriel can hurt you, and then those backs coming out of the backfield, what they're doing is creating one-on-ones and creating mismatches, and they're really good at doing that. You know, I think you have to play a certain amount of zone against them. And your guys have to tackle. You have to get Jones down. You got to get him down on the ground. And that's easier said than done.
Yeah, I mean, the highlight play from that NFC title game was that short crossing route that he turned into a 78-yard touchdown, yeah, or whatever it was, where Gunter fell down and missed a tackle, and then he shoved either Randall or Rollins to the ground.
And it was embarrassing. It
just didn't look good. Now, the first time they played, Gabriel was a big factor, and he had that really big, I think it was a touchdown catch, when mm-hmm. he was matched up against Dimitri Goodson before mm-hmm. Goodson tore his ACL. Now, he's a 4-3-8 or 4-3-7 guy. How do the Packers deal with that, do you think? Because they don't even have anybody that can get that fast.
No, but, you know, any guy can run. Just because he can run, you can beat speed with really good technique, and just try to disrupt his route. Now, that's another kind of scary proposition, because if you miss with him, then it's over. He's by you. So, you know, the other thing you can do is play off coverage and then just close on him with a zone coverage. I'm really interested to see how much man they play against the Falcons. I think it'll be a little bit of a mix there. You know, early downs will probably be more zone, and then, you know, third downs will probably be more man, but who knows? I think Capers has got to come up with something.
The third guy, Mohamed Sanu, is one that I think could have a sneaky big game mm-hmm. if the Packers play zone. Devon House was talking about, you know, each guy in succession and what they do well and what they do poorly, and sort of just breaking him down. And when he got to Sanu, he said the first thing you notice about him is how smart the guy is, that he can sit down in any zone, that he knows how to find the soft spots, that he's not going to blow you away with speed, but he's technical and he runs good routes mm-hmm. and he plays really intelligently, sort of like, you know, again, not to this degree by any means, but a lot of the same descriptions you have when you ask these Packers DBs what makes Jordy Nelson so good against zone. He finds all these soft spots. He's mm-hmm. smart enough to know where they are. And so if the Packers do go zone, and if Julio Jones is sort of, you know, blanketed or taken out, you know, Sanu's a guy that can have 7-8 catches for 80 yards, that kind of thing, where he moves the chains a number of times. So it's no easy task, and as we mentioned the other day, they split out Austin Hooper, they split out Coleman, they split out Freeman. Mm-hmm. It's as talented an offense as they're probably going to face this year.
Yeah, I hate to keep saying that over and over again, but it all comes down to the pressure on Ryan. It's really the The only way you can really stop them, your corners have to cover for a certain amount of time, but you can't expect them to cover forever. You've got to get up in Ryan's face, and I thought Chicago did a really good job of that.
So let's move to how the Packers' defensive front matches up to that offensive line. What do you see there as a potential area they can try and target?
Well, they want to target the right guard, Wes Schweitzer. I think that's a real weak spot. He had a really hard time with Akeem Hicks.
Yes, now, he did.
Everybody is going to have a tough time with Akeem Hicks. He's really a good player. And that's going to happen. You know, he might bounce back from that. But if I'm Dom Capers, I make them figure out a way to block Mike Daniels there and put him over Schweitzer. Then I also rotate Daniels outside and let Perry and Matthews come up the middle against him. Try to keep getting one-on-ones. And then the other thing I would do is make those running backs block. So that's why I like them playing dime, because you start bringing those slot corners and the backs have to stay in. Now, it means that if they block it up, you know, it's one-on-one coverage everywhere else. But I don't think you can sit there and let Matt Ryan sit in a pocket and beat you. So you got to do something to shake it up. And, the way they played against Seattle, if they can replicate any kind of that rush, then they'll be okay.
I don't know if there's going to be too many examples of when they have two of their traditional inside linebackers on the field, because, you know, Atlanta's going to run three wides a lot, at least. But I wondered if this was a game where we might see some of those A-gap blitzes from the inside backers that we saw so often against Philadelphia in that first exhibition game, because you mentioned ways to keep the running backs in the backfield. That's one, too, if guys come free up the middle. And so we saw so much of that against Philadelphia. We didn't see as much against Seattle because they didn't need to, but usually these coaches tend to put in things early that they want to use earlier in the year. Is that something that they could try?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think this is a game where they'll play nitro mostly on third downs.
Okay.
And they'll go with Ryan and Martinez. They might open with nitro, but I think Atlanta's good enough that they can run on that.
Yeah.
Seattle just could not get anything going because they were getting beat so badly on the offensive line. Atlanta won't get beat that bad, and I think I could see them trying to run the ball with Burnett in the game. So they may wind up having to play Ryan and Martinez there. And then it becomes a chess match. Does Atlanta just try to throw out of its two back or one back and three wide outs? It'll be kind of interesting to see. I keep going back to that Chicago game, and Chicago just crammed the line of scrimmage and didn't let them run the ball, and it was really effective.
When it comes to their tackles, Jake Matthews on the left side and Schrader on the right side, Ryan Schrader, do you think that Perry and Matthews can replicate some of the success that they had against Seattle against those two guys?
Well, so, you know, last year Matthews went up against his cousin Jake quite a bit in that championship game, and you know, Matthews can argue that he was playing one-armed, and he probably was. I thought Jake Matthews just dominated him last year. He wouldn't exactly cop to that when he talked this week. But Nick Perry is powerful enough to beat anybody. It's just a matter of whether he's, you know, got his rhythm, whether the other guy is playing well. He can't get frustrated. You know, he was able to just dominate this other guy, and when that's happening, you know, your juices are flowing and you're thinking sack every time. But when you get stuffed a couple times, it's the guy who can keep coming at you. That's what Mike Daniels does. You know, he just keeps coming. Nick Perry, I'm not sure that he's that kind of player. I think that's what they're trying to get him to be.
Now, Leonard Floyd of the Bears is a very different type of player in terms of body size and the way he plays, but he couldn't get anything going, really, with the exception of maybe one play. I think he beat the left tackle, if I can remember picturing it from watching the game. And so that's a premier pass rusher. Again, totally different style, but a guy that didn't have a ton of success. So it's not as if these tackles are anywhere near the train wreck that it was with Reese Odhiambo. And, you know, it was just a mess last week. So I think for the Packers to expect that they can have that same level of influence from the edge would be a little naive, and they have to be more creative.
Well, yeah, they have to feel it out. They have to come in, and I would start with my four-man rush. If I were Capers, I wouldn't come out blitzing right away. Find out whether you can get some pressure with those guys. Play a little bit of base defense or nickel with your two big inside linebackers and find out whether you can get the pressure you need. If you can't, then you start dialing up the blitzes a little bit. So I don't know how he'll do it. He might just get aggressive and go for it right away, but you don't want to give up a lot of big plays early, because then you're out of the game. Then you're forcing yourself to have to score a ton.
Should we flip to the other side and look at the Packers' offense against their defense?
Yeah.
Okay, so to me, I guess here it has to start with the offensive line.
Yeah.
You know,
no
for those question. Of you who haven't seen, Wednesday and Thursday, Brian Bulaga was not at the facility at Lambeau Field other than for about 5 minutes in the morning. They sent him home with flu-like symptoms. They didn't want him around. So McCarthy said they don't really have a good feel for where he is with the flu. They don't really have a good feel for where he is with that injured ankle. I'm going to say at this point, as we record this Thursday night to be published Friday morning, I'm going to say he doesn't play.
Yeah, I agree. I'm 90% sure he won't play. I just think after 2 days of being just laid out by the flu, and then you haven't had – you aren't working on your ankle during those 2 days as well – no chance. I would just be shocked if he played. So I always want to call him Barkley. I always want to call him Kyle Barkley. Why is that?
Is there
a basketball player named Kyle Barkley?
Is it Don Barkley put together
with
Kyle Murphy?
It is, except I'm spelling it with a K. So
Matt
it's
Barkley?
Not Charles. Yeah, Matt Barkley. Maybe that's what it is.
I don't know.
I don't know either. But anyway, Kyle Murphy. Let's try to get that straight.
So Murphy at right tackle, and then everything else remains the same.
Yeah, and then they just pray that everybody holds up.
And again, we went through all this on Wednesday, but if Bakhtiari's hamstring gives out, they've got a world of trouble, and the game's over,
I
think.
White flag time,
So how do you think they attack Murphy? You mentioned Wednesday that for the first time he has something on tape for teams to study. And that makes a big difference. Even if you play well, it makes a big difference.
Yeah. Now, they got a little bit of tape from Denver. I mean, Seattle was able to. And he did a pretty good job. I think what they're going to notice, and this is where I'm sure Vic Beasley and Brooks Reed, two edge rushing guys, notice that Murphy just took away the inside and made guys beat him around the corner. And so they're just going to set themselves to get around the corner.
Which is what they generally try and do anyway, those two guys.
Yeah. Now, so I don't know. They'll probably try to get that first, and then they'll try to set him up a little bit and try to get inside after that, get him to overcommit outside and then go inside. But it's going to be tough. You know, he faced good players. I mean, he faced, you know, Averill. He faced Bennett to some degree. Those aren't slouches. Frank Clark, those are really good players. And it's just that this is on the road, speed guys. I think it's a little different animal.
And it's different philosophically, too, in that the Seahawks line up essentially the same four guys every play.
Right.
Atlanta, under Dan Quinn, they'll just rotate guys in and out, and they've got waves of guys, almost similar to what Capers did 2 years ago with his outside backers, where it was like a rotation machine. So not only are they going to face a lot of different guys, but they're going to have guys that are playing fewer snaps and are fresher late in the game. Brooks Reed, to me, is a guy that I just enjoy watching him play. I mean, the guy is definitely your classic overachiever in mm-hmm. that he's not the most physically impressive guy. He's not going to wow you with strength or speed or size. But the guy just plays like his hair is on fire. And he was the one that got that sack to end the game against the Bears on fourth down when they needed to
yes.
throw into the end zone.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the one that turned the corner and got the sack.
Right.
What about on the interior? Do they have anything that can trouble, you know, the guards and Lindsley?
Yeah, Grady Jarrett's a pretty solid player. Dontari Bowe, he's a run stopper. Big, huge guy. And it's essentially like having B.J. Raji there. You know, you can rush all these guys, and then in case they run it, you got a big monster in the middle to stop the run. If I'm the Packers, I come out and I start out with double tight ends, and I see if I can run the ball, if I can be a power team and run it against them, because they're built on speed.
And that lasts for two plays, and then McCarthy calls 46 passes
exactly,
in a row.
Exactly. Then you take your tight ends off the field, and you play five wides the whole game. I would start out with Bennett and Kendricks, and even, you know, or have Rutkowski in the backfield and try to establish Montgomery. And then once you do that, if you can do that, then you've sort of taken the step towards winning the game, because all of a sudden you're going to eat up some clock. You're keeping Atlanta's offense on the bench. I think it's really important that they run the ball well.
Just for the sake of playing devil's advocate, is there anything to be said for opening up with four and five wide? Because after Alford and Trufant, their two starting corners, they don't have a lot. I mean, I'm looking at C.J.
Yeah.
Goodwin, Brian Poole, Bleedy Ray Wilson, UConn alum. I'm obligated to point that
yeah.
out, with a great name. There just doesn't seem to be much there, in the same way that once Jeremy Lane went down, Seattle was cooked at those spots.
Right, and you kind of want to get Keanu Neal in coverage situations.
Definitely.
That's important. If you can get him matched up against a receiver, that's a good matchup. He's their big-hitting safety. Sure, and I could be totally wrong about the two tight ends. I could see McCarthy coming out. Really, I could, doing that. It would not surprise me. I mean, it's not what I would do, but I could see him, you know, quick passing game. They got Geronimo Allison back, perfect guy to work the sidelines and, you know, try to get something going. But they're going to have to be really efficient if they do that. They can't sit there and try to go for the deep ball the whole time.
So would you rather take a hit from Keanu Neal or Cam Chancellor? One of them gets a downhill shot at you.
Wow.
I mean, Neal was just laying guys out in that Bears game.
Oh,
Tariq
man.
Cohen, he hit hard a couple times.
You know, that's like asking for an arrow or a bullet, you know? I'm not sure. Cam Chancellor, at least I could duck under him and like maybe squirt through his legs or something. Keanu Neal's just going to plow you like a bulldozer.
What do you think the influence will be from their inside backers and the fact that they're built, you know, totally on speed, like you said?
Yeah, and that's why I think they need to run at them.
Gotcha.
I would, but, you know, the other thing, and you have to go back to that Super Bowl. Go back to the Super Bowl and watch what the back did to them. They couldn't cover James White. I mean, they just lost him in their coverage. And think about it. You know, they also split him out, and they went to a short passing game. I could see McCarthy doing that, and doing that with Ty Montgomery.
So one of my friends texted me that this morning, because he owns Montgomery in fantasy, and he said,
yeah.
Oh, can't this guy get a million receptions? And I said, well, in theory, yeah. And then I went back and looked at the NFC title game. Between all their running backs and fullbacks for the Packers, they combined for two catches for 5 yards, which to me was like, okay, why? And I couldn't remember why. Why didn't they try that more against those guys? Was it because
question.
They were down enough where they had to throw downfield?
Probably.
It just seemed odd to me that Montgomery, of all games, would struggle against these guys.
Yeah. Everything was kind of everything was kind of discombobulated for them going into that game. They really weren't – nothing was really the way it should have been, and they never could get any kind of rhythm. But I do – I think they have to look at both I wouldn't be surprised if they even considered Devontae Mays to come in and run some screens and maybe split out a little, just because he's got that kind of quickness, that James White quickness, where that was hard for them to – that was hard for Atlanta to handle, mostly because, you know, maybe you find a way to get Neal matched up on those guys or one of their safeties.
So you don't think they go back to what they did in Week 8, which is have to play Devontae Adams in the backfield out of necessity, where he lined up at running back because Montgomery was out?
Yeah, that's right.
That was a wild game.
That was. It was. And it was actually kind of effective.
It was.
You know, and that's why your question is really good about why they didn't do that with Montgomery more.
And so I think the last area to look at this is something that you wrote about earlier in the week, which was how many different ways McCarthy can use these tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
Now, against the Falcons personnel that we just sort of went through group by group, how do you see it playing out for Kendricks, for Bennett, and for Richard Rodgers?
Well, part of the idea of that story was to – I went through and looked at all the different places Bennett lined up. And I don't think that was their plan going in. I think their plan was to be a little more traditional and run the ball a little bit. But when Seattle came out with their base defense against their sub packages, they were like, all right, let's just throw it. I think that's going to be the way things work all year. I think they'll go in with a plan with one way to run the ball behind Bennett and another way to throw it with him, and be flexible enough to use both. And I think that's a tremendous advantage that you can have when you can line up a tight end that can run block, and then you can, if you decide later you want to split them out, you can do that too.
And don't forget, there were some times in OTAs in camp where they had Bennett in line and then they split Kendricks out.
Sure.
Because Kendricks can do that too. So I wouldn't be surprised, too, if those guys, you know, intermatch or just try different things over the course of a game.
They had them both in lineup and slot positions or flex positions. And that's one of those things where you bring them in, you see what kind of personnel Atlanta brings in, and you decide whether you want them in line. If they go nickel, then you go in line. If they come in with their base defense with those two guys, then you split them out and you try to get a matchup with a linebacker.
It's the tight end thing, I think, has to be for McCarthy. Just he's got to be just giddy that he has all these options, because mm-hmm. that's the position that he likes. He's got somebody to stretch the field. The one thing about this tight end group that I don't know if concern is the right word, but I'm just curious about how it will play out in the long term, is they really don't have any speed at the tight end position.
No, not like Jared Cook last year. Kendricks can move. He's not bad, but they don't have – Jared Cook was a pretty special guy. I mean, he was a former wide receiver.
And Bennett can't really run, I mean, that well.
No, he can get down the field, but you really want to get him the ball and then let him run. You don't necessarily – you're not really trying to throw the ball deep down the field to him.
So does that adjust, do you think, the way that they use that personnel group, where it's Bennett alone on one side or JerMichael Finley alone on one side and then three receivers on the other? If they don't have the speed to get inside, do they have to do different things with that alignment?
Yeah, a little bit. Like Finley, I thought they threw a lot of slants to Finley.
Yeah, and Cook, too.
Because he was fast. I don't know if Bennett – you can certainly – you could certainly throw them, but because he's such a big target.
It would be like boxing out rather than dealing with speed.
Right. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like the kind of route you would want with him. You'd probably want to see how the guy's playing and then adjust that way. And if the guy plays off, I would throw it to him just, you know, like those quick hitch things they do. Let him try to run against a linebacker. Put that stiff arm that he uses.
Anything else? Packers offense against Atlanta defense?
You know, I just if Atlanta decides it's going to bring some heat, that would be really a good test of Ty Montgomery.
No question.
Because Seattle didn't blitz all that much.
No.
And, you know, he did have to protect a couple times. But if I'm Atlanta, maybe I try to make him prove that he can pass block.
Takes away some of his ability to sneak out of the backfield, too, mm-hmm. just like we said with the Atlanta backs. So definitely something to keep an eye on there. And we would be remiss not to mention that Jordan Tripp is now on this team.
That's right.
So they're going to deal with him on special teams. Former Packers inside linebacker, yeah. Released during final cuts.
Oh, he's going to have a chip on his shoulder.
Yes, he is. I don't know what kind of secrets he might have, but Trevor Davis better watch out in the middle of the field.
I know. Why don't they just have like a gladiator match between him and Chris Odom?
Well, that'd be good.
You know, two guys playing their ex-teammates or ex-teams. Former teams, just have them line up, you know, instead of a coin flip, you have each guy line up at the 20 and put the ball at the 50 and just wham, go for it, you know.
We're trying to take concussions out of the game.
That's really bad. I shouldn't say that. Okay, so they have to walk to the football. The first guy that gets there, then they can wrestle for it.
That's a real test of your leg muscles, power walking.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we clearly have exhausted all of our topics if we're talking about power walking here. So,
oh, I could talk about that all day long.
I think it's time for us to go. We will see you in the early morning hours Monday. We'll have another podcast ready to go. Tom and I will be deliriously recording at about 3 a.m.
Oh, man, that's going to be brutal.
Somewhere in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah, don't forget to check in on the live blog. Live blog. Live blog. Just keep saying that to yourself. Live blog. I'll be pumped with so much coffee, it won't even be funny. So join us.
You'll have the live blog on Sunday, a podcast on Monday. Until then, check out all of our coverage on JS Online and PackersNews.com.
99 cents a week. That's it.
That's all it is.
Oh, my God. Come on. Get cracking, people.
And we'll talk to you soon.